Welcome to Season 2, Episode 9, Sara.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We are, it's a bit shit outside, isn't it?
Yesterday was the best day of the week, and it was the day that I did not commute in. So I timed that really badly.
That's true, you had a day on the couch-ish. No, you were working, I know, you're sore.
Hey, I output quite a bit yesterday, to be honest.
I saw.
But I do have a bit of a blocked nose, so that's a warning to anyone listening.
So you could go and announce some trains, maybe? That's a special... Arriving at the King's Cross platform 2. That's how you do the... Never done that before?
No, never done that. Oh. But I will next time.
Okay.
I'll stand on... Anyway, episode 9. I have a theory that episode 9 is always the best episode of each season of Game of Thrones. Because they go, well, except for the latest one, obviously, because they had six episodes, but they go all out in episode 9. You get a big battle. You get.
Is that because that's the penultimate to the season?
Yes. Okay. And then the final is always a little bit shit because they have to wrap up, tie up all the loose ends. But the episode 9, always good.
This one will be good then?
Yeah.
Next one will be a bit shit.
But you said that episode 10 is not your season finale anyway.
It's probably halfway, I
think. Yeah.
So, we actually have a load of episodes in the can, as they say in the industry, but they're not here right now. So we do have some great episodes coming up. In a very special edition of Never Not Creative, Matt Leach from Oz Design Radio and I interviewed Mills and Sinks, the founders of Us Too. So that'll be coming up soon, and we're going to co-release that with ADR. And we also have the breakouts from the design conference around mental health, which are going to be coming up soon. We just don't have the audio yet, but there's some great discussions and presentations coming up. And that kind of, we've been busy over the last few weeks, outer industry events.
Lots of industry events.
And that kind of sparked what we thought we could talk about in this episode, which is actually... like how important they are and what a good job some of these industry events are doing at the moment from a whole range of different kind of perspectives. So you in particular, I went on holiday, but you in particular have been pretty busy with a couple of events that you went to in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I went to both the Rare Masterclass at Semi-Permanent, and I also managed to catch one day of Semi-Permanent. For anyone who doesn't know, the Rare Masterclass is a sort of two-day leadership workshop run by, it's actually an independent thing, but sponsored by Google, founded by Tara McKenty and Stephanie, I'm not going to attempt her surname because it's, but I feel really bad about that. Anyway, and it's designed and aimed, it's designed to give diverse or minority talent the skills they need to move into more leadership positions and also tools for daily life and tools for the workplace. So that was a really interesting experience from my point of view. Semi-Permanent, as always, is this kind of great, massive design event with lots of inspiring speakers. And then we all headed up to the design conference in Brisbane.
We did. And we had a great time there. And I think this was, you know, the design conference gets better every year, and the lineup this year was stellar. But let's start at Rare, because you talked about Rare being actually quite a big part of it is really personal development. Do you feel personally developed?
What a question. So the format was, I'll just run through the format quite quickly. Semi-Permanent was the 3-day design conference that was on at Courage Works in Sydney for 3 days. Rare was sort of a breakout of that, where we were all in one particular room and we got a sort of different program, but there were speakers from Semi-Permanent that came into our section and did shorter versions of their Semi-Permanent speeches. But what was good about that was that the smaller breakout meant it was a much more casual atmosphere. You got to meet a lot of other people in similar positions as you. And the vibe was very much like you could talk to anyone. You could be really open and transparent about what you were feeling. You did workshops together. And that was great. So it was a mix between presentations and these hands-on workshops.
How many people
80 people.
Oh, 80. Right, 80. So a decent amount, yeah.
Yeah, decent amount.
And you had
amount.
To apply to get in, did you?
You do have to apply.
It's so not just who gives them the most money. It's
You do have to apply. You do have to pay. And that, but the ticket gives you access to semi-permanent and everything like that as well. But it was pretty full on. So we'd have 2 half-hour talks and then a 2-hour workshop and then pretty much a 15-minute break before you're back into it again and then a lunchtime. So there's a lot to absorb, but very valuable.
So you were telling me that, like, because of it being quite personal development based, you found it quite interesting around, like, your values or trying to find your values and how that can build up your confidence.
Yeah, so...
You do seem to be walking with a spring in your step.
Oh, not this week, Andy, after TDC, but we'll get to that. that was a roller coaster. So it's... To make this quite practical, I was thinking about the workshops and what the good takeaways would be. And the workshops were sort of longer exercises, but... the values exercise was good in that it helped nail down the things that were important to you and the things that you wanted to achieve. And then from there, you do goal setting and you make sure that those goals align with your values. And then after that, you talk about how they will practically manifest. So there is an exercise about writing a personal manifesto, which I have not yet done, but taking it from sort of the conceptual level, which is quite, you know, that's quite easy. You know, I value being resilient. I value being there for my family. But then how will you actually make these things happen in your day-to-day life? So documenting exactly the steps you'll take, that was a useful thing to do. And I don't think that anyone needs a formalized structure around that. I think you can do that on your own at home, set aside time to set your goals and then the steps that you will take to reach those goals and to remind yourself of those goals.
Did you share those values with each other?
Or yes.
Was it very much a personal exercise?
Yes. I mean, it wasn't like a great big kumbaya singing circle, but you did sort of show each other. People volunteered the values that they had created.
So were there any moments when you're like, oh shit, that's a good value. I should have it. Did anyone have like the best value?
Well, there's a set of values and then you can add to it. Right. It's quite hard prioritizing them. So you go through this sheet and you pick 30 and then you have to pick your top 10 and then you have to pick your top 5. And so as you go through that process, it's quite hard to narrow them down. But it's interesting because some of the values, they sort of overlapped. One was love and one was loving. But they do mean different things. So anyway.
Is it give and take?
Well, I guess so. Yeah. But then you can just define it yourself as to what each of these things are. So,
okay, cool. That's good. Yep. And then the confidence bit, is that more a general overall, this like going through these exercises and being with these people gives you more confidence?
There was no specific exercise around confidence. It felt like a running theme throughout because a lot of the minority experience is that it can be quite lonely. So the confidence theme came through a lot of the talks. And confidence in the sense that it's not just about, you know, get out there and shout the loudest, but just to be comfortable with who you are and to redirect being different into a strength. So that was not a specific exercise, but I saw it as a running theme through a lot of the talks, especially from a lot of the speakers who got up and shared their stories and also through the strength-based exercises.
And a few episodes ago, we had Mirella on, who obviously was from Wementor, and one of the themes in Rare was mentoring and kind of networking.
Yes,
They teach you how to do that better.
I think that's a hard thing to teach from a podium. But one thing I found really interesting about the networking and mentorship part of it was to think of, instead of thinking of one mentor to kind of cover everything, every sort of advisory aspect in your life to think of who are the people in your life at the moment that could make up a board of advisors sort of thing, in inverted commas. That sounds very corporate, but it's there was a great Venn diagram, which I can't show anyone, but it's about, because it's a podcast, but it's about sort of personal, people you go to frequently for personal questions, and then there are people who you'd go to for career questions, and then you'd have people that overlap both career and personal, and they can be your mentors. And it's about sort of not expecting to get everything from one person, and understanding that you can spread your questions or your advice from those specialists in those fields or specialists in your life, I guess. And I thought that was a really good way of looking at it, as a board of advisors rather than just one sole person that's there for everything.
I think that's important as well, because it means that every time you speak to those people, you can have a very focused conversation around what you need. And I think it also means that you're not putting your mentor up on a pedestal, because if you just have one and they sit up there, it's like you are suddenly the sage of all
wisdom, and you can tell me what to do with my life in all respects. And it's less pressure on each of these people because everyone's busy and everyone wants to give, but everyone has a capacity for giving.
The Golden Child with Eddie Murphy. Wasn't there like a...
I don't get all your movie references, Andy. Sorry.
It was an old one. Okay.
But Adventures in Babysitting is...
Well, Andy's, I mean, I can't recommend that film highly enough.
Still haven't seen it.
Negotiation.
Yes.
That was the other big thing you took out of Rare. And they focused on it quite a bit, because I guess it's important that if you want to get those values across the line and you want to be who you are, you've got to sort of fight your way through in some cases.
Yes. That was probably the last... It was the last workshop of the session of the 2 days. So, to be honest, I was feeling quite like brain overload by then. It was quite a sort of academic way of thinking about negotiation. So, I probably took less out of that than I was hoping to. But one key takeaway, I think, was thinking about what they call the BATNA, which is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. But I was saying to Andy this morning that is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement just another negotiated agreement? I don't quite get that. But it's about thinking of different things that you can give and take to feel satisfied with what you come out with at the end. So that can spread from, you know, salary negotiations to negotiations with clients to... I guess, any sort of give and take conversation you might have. It's an interesting thing to think about. So you could just look up BATNA, BATNA, and get some information on that.
I think negotiating is interesting because it's interesting on both perspectives. Like, I find that interesting, like you talking about, it's how satisfied you are with the outcome. But also, like, really good negotiators are good at helping you feel satisfied with the outcome that they were negotiating for. Like, it's...
True.
Here's another movie reference, Get Him to the Greek. Now you've seen that.
Yeah, no, I do know. I have seen that.
Now,
definitely.
The beginning of Get Him to the Greek is, like, one of my favourite bits of, like, advice for client service people, when he starts talking about fucking with your mind, and he goes, I'm fucking with you right now.
Right,
can you feel me in your ear? And it's like, that's one of my favorites. But it's true, because there's part of it which is, okay, you go in knowing what you need and what you're going to walk away from as well. Mm-hmm. So having that point where I'm not negotiating anymore, I'm actually going to walk away. But at the same time, you've got to be thinking about what is the other person going to be comfortable with. And I always find that quite interesting.
There was one exercise, so we had to do a role play, and it was a salary negotiation, but I was on the hiring side in this particular role play, and I was given a range that I was allowed to give, and I actually ended up giving away more than the range, higher than the range, not by much, $500 per year, right? Mm-hmm. So at the end I thought, $500. The exercise has told me that this person's really good and has come highly recommended. Is it worth my time to go and find another applicant for $500 a year?
True. No.
And so I said, okay, I went over the range. But the facilitator did say that he's used to getting these kind of explanations from creative people, and he doesn't get this from the corporates that he gives the workshops
to. And also, it's not your money.
No,
it's very easy to give away somebody else's money, your company's money.
Yeah.
Yes. Cool. So, I mean, so Rare sounded really, really good. And actually, what makes it good as well is that kind of sharing of the speakers with Semi Permanent. So I know that you have had internal conflicts with Uber in the past as to how ethical they are as a company. And there, lo and behold, was the new VP of design at Uber. How did that make you feel?
I guess I went in thinking, yeah, whatever. I'll watch this talk and see what happens. But Michael Goff, he really won me over. He started at Uber after the Kalanick days, so that's already a plus. And he really addressed the issue that Uber had. He talked about his previous jobs and how he's been a bit of a champion for diversity through those positions and what he's seen come out of it. And I don't know how to describe it, but he was just a very well-spoken champion for diversity. And he did say, you know, I can't... There was a point on a panel where he was up there talking about these things, and he said, look, you know, I am not on paper a minority, but long pause, big grin, I am old and your type is too small, and that is something you need to consider, which is very true. You know, it's the perspective. That's kind of an explanation, or like a real example of the different perspectives you need to have to really think about design in a more accessible way. So he was great. He was really, really good.
And now you feel, even though you used Uber the whole time, you feel a little bit better about it as well. But it's also, I find it interesting that actually I expect, and I don't know obviously, but one of the big reasons for obviously hiring this guy was his past track record of a champion of diversity, which actually I think, you know, we're probably seeing more and more in the industry now, which is where, you know, skills are kind of like a given. And, you know, your portfolio is, I was getting in trouble a little bit with this, I think, but I feel like your portfolio is more of a commodity, and it's you that is the difference. And so if it's you that's going for the job, it's actually, what are you bringing to the team? What are you bringing to the company? It's expected you're going to be a good designer. Like that's, I expect that. Mm. But actually, are you going to be able to, you know, change a culture, which in Uber's case, I expect a lot of the hiring that happened after those dark days was about changing culture. And it's like, oh, good, you can design as well.
I'll have you know that I only reinstalled Uber after that. Okay. So I did hashtag delete Uber for
Oh, that's when you started leaving your bike in the office.
It's when GoCatch started not being able to find me rides. But, you know, he also is clearly the person on the talk circuit. So, you know, he's...
pretty polished around all of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Uber knows who to pull out. As their face.
Who else?
So a couple of other really good talks that I went to was Erica Dawn from... She's the graphic designer on Isle of Dogs. She has a Japanese background and grew up in Japan, so that was partly... I mean, she's got great work, but she's also hired because as sort of a quasi-cultural consultant. And she was great because her style was very... understated, it was quiet, softly spoken, but she really still held the conversation. And I felt like that was a good example of how you don't have to be this great big salesperson to make a good presentation. She did it, and also her work is amazing and really interesting, and she was funny and, you know, talked about her kind of offshoot break from graphic design as a street food vendor, which she said... I'm allowed to talk about that, right? I don't usually mention it, but your career doesn't have to be linear. And I liked that she'd included that strange little piece of her history in this presentation, because it just kind of makes everyone feel normal, which I think is a bit of a theme that.
And
we'll
not
get
everyone
to.
Has to be Tony Robbins on stage, right? Like, you don't have to jump around, big booming voice. Sometimes, like, the vulnerability and the that understated kind of delivery is actually much more engaging, isn't it? Sometimes.
I guess it all ties into the story you tell as well. So she told her story quite well.
And then you listen to a head of advertising, which just instantly isn't necessarily the thing that drives you to want to listen to a talk. But it was good by the sounds of it.
It was really good. It was really good. So Tom Armstrong from the New York Times, he ran through how, you know, how Donald Trump always calls the New York Times the failing New York Times. And he said 10 years ago, that would have been correct. But they spent a long time looking at their business model and knowing that the digital revolution is was upon them, looking at the way that the New York Times could move with the times. So, you know, it went from, he said there was like, you know, a whole bunch of ad salespeople in a room taking calls and booking space in a newspaper, to completely changing it to being an in-house content branding studio where they create content for brands from start to finish and tell stories about those brands, and also just display them and have this interactive visual storytelling online that is quite cutting edge. So it was good to see that from the business model point of view and how that's helped them. They did not mention the crossword puzzle, though, and I felt like that was a big oversight.
Does he have any say in the crossword puzzle, this guy? Probably not.
I don't know, but yeah. The New York Times crossword subscription, or the app, I can't remember exactly, but it's the fourth most downloaded product.
On your iPhone?
No, I only download it once. It never gets deleted, Andy. It is the top used app. Anyway.
Screen time would tell you that the New York Times crossword app is your number one.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I'd say so.
Cool, that's good. So obviously that all happened in Sydney a couple of weeks ago. And then last week we went up to Brisbane for the design conference. Your first design conference, I think.
My first design conference.
My fifth.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've seen the evolution.
I've seen the evolution. And I must admit, like, it gets better every year. And I'm always amazed at kind of who Matt Haynes, the founder and runner of the design conference. I'm always amazed at who he can get and how he gets them all into Brisbane. And this year, again, was just like another step up in terms of speakers. And I think, you know, he tries really hard at trying to get a very big kind of coverage of speakers. So international, like full diversity, international, gender, beliefs, ages. It was a real mix, wasn't it? Yeah.
All different kinds of design, so, or creativity. Mm. It's not even all design.
So I feel like it's also a very different vibe to other conferences. So I've always noticed, and I've always kind of recommended a design conference as having this laid back, everybody on the one level vibe. And even, you know, you see that there are international speakers coming in and they instantly get it as well because they start talking about it. And I think when people have said, oh, you know, like, I know sometimes they've had questions from the audience, so like, oh, you know, how can we possibly get into your position? And they literally say it's like five steps. You know, just come up on stage. And some people did, in fact, get invited up on stage without really knowing that that was going to happen. So I've always loved that. And all of the after kind of main events. So there was stuff every single night. You can pay a little bit extra to hang out at like premium parties. But at the same time, everyone's just hanging around having a beer. Like there's no special green room for the VIP treatment of like, well, don't let the speakers touch the audience, you know.
The speakers were everywhere, milling around. You could talk to them. They were talking to each other. They all got tattoos together. You know, it was a very intimate and relaxed atmosphere, which is refreshing.
And if you're staying at the same hotel, you know.
There's no escape.
That's true.
You tried to escape, Andy. Yes,
I did, and ended up right in the middle of it. So yeah, and I think like this year, like what a great mix of people. So there's sort of, you know, up and coming, emerging artists and illustrators and designers. Martina Martian, who, you know, I think she's like 22, 23. And that was an amazing stat, wasn't it? So she doesn't want to be known as the Giphy Queen, which let's just, we'll say that once and then that's it. But 5.4 billion views of her GIFs on Giphy. That is nuts.
Isn't that just 1.6 billion off a view per person on the planet? If we're looking at 7 billion people these days, roughly.
If you say so.
That means there's people who've watched it over and over again.
And so, you know, and she just, I loved her talk, was just like, just start doing it. Like, just have a go at it. But then she had this really interesting concept of like, there were like phases in her development so far, bearing in mind that this development is like 2 years. And she talked about how, you know, she'd done this and then she goes, oh, you know, I thought I'd reached my potential. And I'm sat there going, wow, like, that's pretty good. If you reached your potential by, you know,
what are you
going to
do for the rest of the 60, 70 years?
Exactly. And so, and then it was like, and then I found this other thing and then I found this other thing and then I thought I'd reached my potential again. Then I found another thing and I thought, like, it was so great how she basically treated these parts of her life as like peaks, but then was open to the next one. I kind of really liked the way that came across.
I think that that was a recurring theme. This kind of, I think, was it Kellyanna?
Kellyanna, yeah, from London, yeah.
Yeah, that she wrote "Everything's a Work in Progress," I think, unless I'm getting them all mixed up. But that seemed like a recurring theme that, you know, do something, just do whatever it is that makes you happy now, but it doesn't mean the pressure on that one thing is pretty low because there's always the next day or the next week or the next month to do something else and to improve it. I think there was a lot of that throughout all the talks.
I think everyone really encouraged the mentality of only do what you're doing if you enjoy it. And if you're not enjoying it, change path, change tack, like do something different. And even if that's for a bit, to come back to it. Mm. It was kind of so important to do that. Who else did we have? Adam J.K.
Yeah, I love all his stuff. I actually unfortunately missed his talk because I landed in the middle of it. But from all accounts, it was amazing.
Yeah, and he's very honest, open, and then just quite humble as well with everything that he produces and the way that he talks about it. And it's, you know, even like, he was, I think he was at the side of the, or just outside the auditorium at one point selling his pins and, yeah, you know, he's just there and he's just doing it. And he's on tour right now around Australia.
He might be in Adelaide by now. I think he went to Melbourne and Tasmania.
And then we also had, talking of going back to actually the thing you talked about earlier, which is how kind of more softly spoken, understated people hold an audience, then, you know, Mercedes Bazan, who is an amazing illustrator, also works for Stripe in San Francisco, but out of Dublin. And she was just like, is she possibly one of the nicest people you've ever met?
I didn't actually meet her, but that's how she comes across on stage. It's completely genuine and open and honest. I think there was a lot of honesty through the whole conference, which was, it does make you feel quite inspired, not in the same way that, I mean, you do get inspired by amazing work, but you also get inspired by, okay, we're all in it together. You know, everyone's just a human being.
It's so important.
She's up there kind of going, and then I felt really sad.
She was kind of punctuated all parts of her talks with how she was feeling at that moment in her life. It was very, very good.
Yeah, very, it was endearing. Very, very good.
Also, big names. So T. Uglo gave just a mind-blowing talk. I think one of the things, I couldn't even get to the levels that she was going to with some of the stuff, but I think when she talked about the importance of us all being able to understand the fact that the truth doesn't exist and that we all see things from different perspectives, so that my truth is very different to your truth, but just because of my upbringing, my background, my, you know, my mental state at any one point in time, I could see things completely differently and they would be true for me, but they're not the truth because they wouldn't be true for you. Mm. And then boom, your mind explodes and then she moved on to the next subject. But I think, I'm sure that talk will go up online at some point and yeah, she is amazing.
She has been sort of one of the people that I have followed for years and everything that she does at Google as well, Creative Lab, is pretty awe inspiring.
And that importance of diversity, I think, you know, it's a theme that keeps coming back up, to be able to have those different perspectives in whatever you do and whatever work you're doing. I think it was Prue Jones from Fjord that said that, or even maybe it was T, but said that 10% of the world's creative directors are female. Which means that, you know, what must it be for trans people? It's probably 0.2% or something. Probably is, you know, T and a few others. And you can't have a more, I don't think you can have a more diverse background than that, potentially. Then there were some crazy people up on stage. James Brown, who is
wearing a jacket with his own face on it, which...
And getting us all to sing Dominic Adami. I still don't know who Dominic Adami is. But I still don't know what that
whole
thing is.
I mean, that just kept going for days.
Yeah, and it did. It carried on to the next day. That's right. And then Mills, who I've seen speak before, who I know, who I listen to his podcast. Mills is the founder of, one of the founders of Us Too. And he's just a loose cannon, isn't he? But it was such an entertaining talk. And I think it's... You need talks like that at a conference to just kind of keep everyone high, literally, and and uplifted. And it was brilliant to kind of watch. And then his presence, he was around the conference for the whole 3 days.
Yeah.
And you just saw it everywhere he went. He'd be lifting people up. He was normally, I don't even think he went to bed that much.
Did anybody though?
I don't think they did. Yeah. Christian did.
Christian, there was one point in Andy ran a really great mentally healthy breakout, which I'm not sure it was recorded, right? So it might be a
that one was videoed and recorded, I think. Yes, which is a bit of a worry because it was quite personal, which is okay live, but then knowing that it exists is. Yeah.
But there's one point where you said if you were looking after your mental health perfectly, you would go to bed on time, you'd eat a healthy diet, you'd exercise regularly, you wouldn't drink too much, all of which. On my hand,
like,
I don't get any sleep. I eat terribly. Yeah. But Christian,
he is that, isn't he? He's the epitome of the mentally healthy person. So Christian, who was in on works with us here at Streamtime, but was on a couple of episodes ago talking about design in house. If you haven't listened to that one, So I mean, for me, that was the other big thing about the design conference that was great. Was I've known Matt quite a few years now, and he gave us the opportunity to do quite a lot with Never Not Creative. And we did a lot of work around mental health. The presentation I gave, at one point I just looked up, and so it was on the breakout stage, not the auditorium, but I felt like almost the whole conference was there. Like there were people literally hanging from the rafters watching this. And then there was tons of people coming up at the end wanting to talk. Also, like people who were sharing, I met a guy from Melbourne who, you know, he talked about being on the same medication and talking about like the side effects and that kind of stuff. And so I think, you know, the more and more that we talk about this and the more and more we can kind of show the courage to do it, the more you're going to help somebody else to be able to talk about it as well. So that was quite good, I thought.
Well, talking about it makes it. It
normal.
Makes it less of a thing, you know. Everyone's got something. It can be physical, it can be mental. No one gets through life unscathed.
And that's the thing. Like when more than 56% of people show that they have a problem with anxiety or depression, that is actually normal. Mm. That's the majority of people.
Mm.
So we kind of have to be able to start treating it as if it's normal, not treating it as if it doesn't exist.
I think there was a great turnout for that talk. That breakout, and I think that says it in itself, that people being interested in the outcomes of that survey means that there's a connection there, some sort of personal connection that
And then I did a lot of hosting and Q&A-ing and paneling over the 3 days.
Not sure you stopped talking.
I know.
So, not in a bad way.
Sure. So one night we did a session called Banish the Burnout. And it made me think a lot about burnout. So on that panel, we had Mills from Us Two. We had Kellyanna from London. And we also had Morella from Studio Vertigo and Were Mentor, who was also my Q&A co-host on the final day. And I think the question that I was sort of leading up to the most in that panel was, do we really have to go through burnout?
I don't have an answer. I mean,
Kelly Anna had an answer, and her answer was yes. And I was at first I was kind of taken aback by that, but then I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think the burnout, there's two types of burnout. There's the burnout you don't want, and then there's the burnout that surprises you all of a sudden because you've been doing something you love 120%. And I think we can stop the first one. I think we can stop the forcing people to do work, to work longer hours, to do stuff, and when they're not really enjoying it, and then burning out, like that is a burnout that should be banished. But the burnout where you're loving what you're doing, you're so into it, you don't even realize, it's almost like my days of playing FIFA till like 3 or 4 in the morning and then not really, like having such a great time and then realizing, shit, I'm only going to get 2 hours sleep. That burnout, you're in control of, you're enjoying it. I think that's okay. You just got to be slightly more aware of it. And I think that's where Kellyanna was going with it. And she had friends. And I think that was the big part of her story. She actually said how she had friends who pointed it out to her and that kind of helped. So I think that is a good thing. Like if you do see it happening to people, you can point it out. But it also is the inevitability is kind of okay if you're enjoying yourself, right?
It is all about choice, isn't it? It's like, this is what I choose to do and this is how I choose to spend my time. And if I spend my time till 3 a.m. working on, that's a big difference between, you know, working at a big agency where it's an expected thing and it happens every night. It's completely different.
Yeah. And then, so the conference finished and I don't know how this happened, but basically there was a breakout at the end after the conference had finished, which we definitely won't do again. But I actually quite enjoyed
quite
in the
people
end.
There.
Yeah, I know.
It was good.
Imagine, you know, the conference finishes, everyone gets up on stage. It's a massive like, wow, thank you, amazing 3 days. And then they all walk out of the auditorium and Prue and I and Matt Leach were doing a final. We were meant to do a breakout around like how do we create a better future, and I was really worried about it in the morning because it was like people don't want another one. I just had the big. It's like having to watch. It actually is very much like the 10th episode after this amazing 9th finale. And it's like, oh yeah, sorry, we just got to tidy a few things up now. And so I renamed that
6:30 p.m. on a
Saturday. It was 6:30 p.m. on Saturday night, exactly. Yeah. And so I renamed the session "Fuck What Now." Because I felt like that's the place I was in, and I'm pretty sure that was the place that quite a few other people were in. And then Prue comes up, blows everyone's mind with, here's the future of work. But then we did this really, and she, you know, such a great presentation. I was watching, like, there was at least, I don't know, 10, 15 people in the front row frantically making notes. And I'm looking at it. I was just sat down on the couch. I gave up. I didn't even take my slides out. I said to Prue, I don't think it's worth it. And I was like, geez, you guys are still going strong at, you know, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, writing notes frantically. And of course, anything that Prue says is worth writing notes about. So
I love
that
Prue.
Makes sense. We all love Prue, don't we?
Side note.
And yeah, and that, but then we got all of these kind of great questions. So we did like a little live Q&A where people could send questions up to the screen. And then we roped Ben Johnston from Joseph Marks up on the stage as well, and we just had a great Q&A and a sort of a great finish to the conference where people could go, I've still got things on my mind that have either been risen or that I haven't had answered yet. And not that we could, you know, it's necessary to say we could answer all of them, but
that kind of embodied the style of conference, don't you think? The fact that you could just invite people up on stage, oh, you're saying something, just come up, let's have a chat about it. It was not in a kind of totally disorganized way, but that there is a bit of chaos, but that felt like the vibe of the whole conference, that it was inclusive, conversations were happening, you didn't have to feel intimidated by asking questions to people that you admired or respected. People were amazing, but they weren't on these pedestals that were inaccessible, you know. And that last breakout, fuck what now, that was kind of a great way to end it off.
And that was a great way, I think, like, summed up a lot of the themes of everything that even we've just talked about in the last three, which is, you know, I think you said it earlier to me, which is everyone's a work in progress. No one's a finished article. And no matter whether you are still in uni, contemplating going to university, looking to start, you know, out into the industry or, you know, your career, or that you're, you know, you've done 20 years, like, no one's there. And I think that really came out from people, like, no matter how amazing they were, I think no one said they'd made it, you know. And I think even just our industry obviously has that, fairly humble at times. And I think, you know, to see that is quite energizing.
Mm. Yeah, it was great. It was a very good... It's been a couple of very busy weeks. And, yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say is that I've come back to a pile of work, which we all have, but it's important to take these timeouts sometimes, so that you do get that refreshed perspective and you see all what is happening. So it never feels like a good time. There's always something to do on your to-do list, but if there's the ability to just park it for a couple of days and do something like this, it's a great energy.
Yeah, you should definitely do it. Take time for yourself.
Mm.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. We have styled out 41 minutes and 45 seconds. I'm liking that. And as always, thank you to Streamtime. You can come and run your creative business with Streamtime. You can quote, you can invoice, you can schedule, you can plan jobs, and a whole bunch of other stuff coming up soon. So watch out for that. Just head over to streamtime.net. There's even like a special offer at the moment. I think we're doing 30% off for end of financial year or summer promo, wherever you are in the world. So jump onto that at streamtime.net. If you want to catch up with what's going on with Never Not Creative, make sure you join the Facebook group. If you've enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review, rate us, just do everything on social media that you can. Don't do everything that you can. That's bound to deliver burnout. But if you want to share, if you want to follow us, whatever you like, that would be awesome. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you, Andy.
Let's come back soon.
Okay. Bye.